Good morning and welcome to Community Matters, an opportunity for us to have a discussion with individuals and organizations that are doing their very best to help the community in a variety of ways. Today, we have Emily Moore in the studio with us, who is the regional recruiter for DePaul Community Resources. And you're thinking, that name sounds familiar. Yes, we've had a discussion once or twice before. And so, Emily, thanks for stopping back by and having another chat with us this morning. It's very much appreciated.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so let's talk about, first of all, just to remind, the regional recruiter. What exactly is that? What does that do?
So a lot of folks think that means that I recruit employees, which is not what I do. My job is to recruit foster parents, sponsored residential providers, and provide community outreach, advocacy, and do things like this, and the media, wow, radio, that type of good stuff here in our community, just to make everybody aware of what our community needs and how we can be helping the community.
It's a huge responsibility talking to individuals that are thinking about becoming foster parents. It's quite a responsibility. I can imagine that that's an interesting conversation.
It is. It's always a little bit different. I feel like with both sponsored residential and foster care, people always have similar questions.
Sure.
And so I've kind of got my script down on how to answer those questions,
right,
but I always get some type of curveball thrown at me.
Well, of course. That's the way it should be. Do you find that individuals that are looking to be foster parents, do they come up with the idea and come to you, or do you, in your day-to-day travels and experiences, find somebody, come in contact with some people that's like, you know what, you would make a great foster parent. Let me talk to you about this individual. How does that work?
So I think there's a little bit of both. I think that when becoming a foster parent or welcoming somebody with a developmental disability into your home, you oftentimes are thinking about it for a while before mm-hmm. you make that first initial call.
Mm-hmm.
Our organization does this a couple of different ways. So our marketing consultant, whose name is Sarah, she does a lot of our media stuff. So she's doing Facebook and, you know, online advertising, okay, and things like that. So we're,
right,
reaching people in that way. So they're hearing about us that way. But they're also hearing about becoming a foster parent or a sponsored provider other ways throughout the news. There's a lot mm-hmm. of news stories going on right now about mm-hmm. all of this. And so they may be hearing about it that way. It's a crisis across our country. So they're seeing it in, you know, other forms of publication. And so I think they're thinking about it. And then a lot of times folks will reach out to us for more information. We may not hear back from them for a couple of months because there,
right,
is that buying period where they,
sure,
want to digest that information.
Because it's a serious commitment.
It absolutely
and
is.
And responsibility.
It absolutely, right, is. And, you know, we appreciate that people take the time to think about it mm-hmm. before jumping in with both feet so that they have a realistic perspective of what that's going to look like. But I do occasionally meet some people and I'm like, you know, have you thought about this? Because you would be really good at it.
And that's, you know, and those circumstances, individuals might look at you and go, you know, I haven't thought about it, but yeah.
Right.
I think maybe we should. I have a friend of mine. They were married for a while, been trying to have children and so forth. And it just wasn't happening.
Right.
And they thought, you know what? We want to be parents. We're good parents, you know, with what qualifications they,
right,
had. And they did. They became foster parents. And they have,
awesome,
helped a bunch of kids. And they love it. It is very fulfilling to them.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So that's a beautiful thing. We also, I heard you mention, not just for individuals who are in need of foster care, but you said individuals that are in special needs,
yes,
and that kind of thing. That is also another division of DePaul,
it,
correct?
Is. Yes, we have a developmental disabilities. Yeah, we have a developmental disability services division. And a lot of folks, not just in our community, but across the state, don't know what resources are available to folks with special needs.
Right.
We're one of the only agencies in the state, one of three actually, that can serve children in our sponsored residential program.
Mm-hmm.
And what sponsored residential is it's home-based care for folks with intellectual or developmental disabilities. So some folks will kind of compare it to foster care, but it's much, much different because of the nature of it.
Okay.
These folks could otherwise be placed in an institution. And so to have them mm-hmm. placed in the community in a family-like environment allows them to have an integrated life and be connected to the communities in which they live. And we also have group homes for folks that maybe have more needs that can't just be served, you know, in a home with just a one,
right,
provider. So the group homes have staff that rotate in and out 24-hour. Exactly. It's,
okay,
a little more intense. And then we have day support support centers as well that do center-based and community-based service for folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So they may go out and volunteer with Meals on Wheels or go to the Humane right. Society and do things that they're interested in doing.
Now, is this, I know there are parents that have individuals, children with special needs.
Yes.
Do you also help with facilitating and helping the parents learn what needs to be done, maybe communication skills, observing frustrations, observing successes, so and know how to reward that. You help the parents in their home as well?
Absolutely. So okay. That is something that a lot of parents don't know. A big piece of our Developmental Disabilities Division is education. While we are, you know, really telling people what services we provide, we're also saying, this is what you need to know to access these services, or this is how, you know, your child can have the most integrated life. And we also have a lot of family members that will provide sponsored residential care in their home to their loved ones and become the provider for their individual, whether it's a cousin or a niece or a daughter or a son right. or, you know, whatever that looks like. And then we have some people that come to us and say, I have a lot of love to give. I have room in my home and I'd be willing to welcome someone into my home. And then for families that maybe just don't have the ability to provide right. that care for their own children, we're able to provide them and connect them with a family that is able to provide that care.
Right.
But it's not like foster care in the sense that that parent now, you know, may not have any connection to that child. The parent can still remain the guardian.
Right.
They're still able to be connected. They're able to, you know, take their children out and do things with them.
You're
in
not
the community.
Relinquishing the
exactly.
relationship.
Exactly. Exactly. You're just building a bigger support system for these folks because that's really tremendous. What they need to thrive in our community
yeah.
as opposed to living in an institution where everything, like, for example, the Central Virginia Training Center, where everything is right there on a campus, from your psychiatry to your dentistry to, mm-hmm. you know, your daily activities. These folks get to go out in the community and go to plays or movies
right.
and go out to eat and then see the doctors that all of us, you know, without an intellectual or developmental disability
right.
see as well. And so it's a way to keep them connected to their community in a way that we haven't really seen happen in the state
and that's
in
vital.
The past. It is.
That's vital.
It's super important.
Everyone has a potential.
Yes.
Some of us, the potential is excelled. Some of us, the potential is a bit more challenging. But I think every one of us has the ability and the desire to be the best that we can be.
Yes.
And there's varying degrees of that. There used to be, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm kind of wrapping my brain around how things are working today mm-hmm. as they did a few decades ago. In the dark ages of developmental disabilities, families didn't have the resources. They didn't understand, why is my family member not like me? What
right.
what's the difference? I don't understand how to communicate. I don't understand how to help. And so when you use the phrase institution, that had a very negative connotation many, many years ago.
Yes.
And I think it was because it was a place that you left someone because you didn't know what to do.
Right.
And that led to a whole bunch of problems there.
Right.
But that is not the situation in today's world, correct?
Well, sort
or are we
of.
Still battling this?
Well, so when the training center here, and I'm just going to speak to the Central Virginia Training Center here in Madison Heights, because it's one of the closest ones to
right.
us. When it first opened, it was called an institution for the feeble-minded. And so the
now,
way
how long
that,
ago was this?
Oh, goodness. I couldn't give you the exact date, but it's been a long time.
Okay.
The Central Virginia Training Center has been around for
okay.
quite some time, many, many, many years. And so that was back, you know, when people with intellectual and developmental disabilities were perceived to not be worthy of
right.
society, you know,
right.
and they were pushed to those institutions to kind of get them away from society.
Right.
Now, it did progress, and we started to see that these were people, you know,
mm-hmm.
they weren't the awful people of society that were banished to institutions, but they were people that we didn't realize could be maintained in a
right.
in a community setting.
And
so they
and
were
actually contribute to society
exactly.
in a variety of ways.
Right, in a meaningful way.
Right.
And so they were put in institutions and they were kept in these institutions because the communities didn't know how to help them and how to manage them in
mm-hmm.
their communities. So what we found recently is actually a lot of the people that have been in these training centers, and there were five open in the state, Central Virginia Training Center is one of the very last to remain open. There is a Department of Justice settlement that has happened. In 2012, the Department of Justice found that Virginia was violating federal law, that we were needlessly using restraints and warehousing people with intellectual and developmental disabilities when they could be served in the community.
Okay.
So the state of Virginia entered into a $2 billion 10-year settlement with the DOJ, which closed four of the five training centers. Central Virginia is the last to close in 2020, and then the Southeastern Training Center in Chesapeake will be the last to remain open at a 75-bed capacity for folks that cannot be maintained in the community. And the reason for this is because we found that a lot of the folks that were in this training center, that were in these training centers, could be a contributing member of society.
Right.
They could, you know, potentially work. They could go out to these day support programs. They could be managed in a home.
Right.
And we just needed to figure out how to put the resources in place to make that happen. And so
give them an opportunity to have a fulfilling life.
Exactly. A fulfilling, beautiful, integrated life. And so while institutions don't have that dark and dreary, you know, appeal that they used to have of we're banishing people out of society, mm-hmm, they still weren't meeting the needs of the folks that we can definitely serve in our community.
Okay. And I am surprised that as recent as 6 years or so ago, this was still an issue.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
So there is a continuing need for education.
Absolutely.
And a continuing need for providing the assistance, the resources to help individuals that have these challenges.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I attend a lot of different events for families that have children with special needs. Many of these family members don't know that these resources exist. They have children that are adults at this point. They are in their late 20s, 30s, potentially 40s, and they have no idea what resources are available.
Is that because the medical community is not aware as well, or they're sharing? I mean, how do you not know in this day and age?
I think that there's a lot that goes into it. The school systems aren't educating parents, maybe because they're not aware. The medical communities might not be aware. There's just no education happening where our systems are not intermingling in the way that they need to intermingle. And so at DePaul, our big thing is going out in the community and trying to be an educator. If you choose, so there's a lot of organizations that offer sponsored residential care in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not out just saying you have to come with us to be a sponsored provider. We want to educate them and let them know that they have personal choice. And so if DePaul is the organization that offers them the support they need and they feel is the best fit for them, awesome. At the end of the day, we just want to make sure they have the resources to do this.
Now, there's an event, if I'm not mistaken, that's coming up to bring awareness and maybe raise a few funds here and there to help out with all of this that's going on?
Yes, absolutely. So we have launched our Embracing Everyday Life campaign. And this campaign is a slow release because we have a couple of different educational pieces that we're releasing with this campaign over the next couple of months. A few of them being videos of our providers and the individuals that they serve talking about what this looks like for them. When we started doing this, we were like, you know, do we make a commercial for this to kind of bring awareness? And then we thought very quickly, no, these are real people. And we want the people that are serving these individuals and the individuals that are being served to tell their story. And so these will be rolling out on our social media. They're a little too long to be commercials on television.
Sure.
And so we're trying to find other ways to get them out there so that folks can see these. But there will definitely be some events and things like that in the works to bring awareness to our communities as to why this is so important. And if they, you know, if they have a family member that needs these resources, how they can get them.
How many people would you say in our general area at this time are in need of these types of services?
So that's a tough one to say, and I'll tell you why. In order to receive services like this in the community, you have to have a Medicaid waiver. And there are several different types of these waivers, but essentially the waivers are funding from the government to allow these services to be provided in the community.
Okay.
What we're running into, and I can speak to the state of Virginia, not really anywhere else in the U.S., but the state of Virginia has over 14,000 people on the waiting list to receive these waivers. I can't tell you off the top of my head, and the data is really hard to find, and that might be because of the DOJ settlement, how many people are receiving these services currently, but over 14,000 people waiting to receive these services. And in June, which is the last report that we got of the data, there were over 3,400 people that were listed as priority one waiting for these services, which means they're in crisis right now, which means they're taxing our medical systems. They are going into psychiatric facilities to have their mental health and developmental needs met. The police are being dispatched to their home to transport them. Our ambulances, our fire trucks, we're taxing the medical system, you know, and if from a government standpoint, they're looking at this as funding, you know, they're looking at this from a monetary standpoint. So when we have to break it down that way to them, we say, okay, think of it this way. If this individual had this waiver and had the services they needed, we would be spending less money than what we're spending having the police, the ambulance, the fire trucks, the hospitals, everybody else, you know, dispatched to provide the services to this individual. And so the DOJ released some numbers, actually, when they were looking at closing down the training centers, and it was $194,000 a year per person to keep an individual in the training center. It's $74,000 a year to provide an individual residence to someone with a disability in the community. Mm. That's a $120,000 difference.
Yeah.
We're saving a ton of money. So to a lot of us—
And helping people.
Exactly. So to a lot of us in this field, it seems very kind of counterproductive to put 14,000 people in a wait list when we're saving money by providing them these services in the community.
It is the government you're dealing
with. It is.
So that pretty much answers that question. All right. So we've covered an awful lot, and I know that we could talk for probably another hour on this subject. but unfortunately, time is not our friend in this particular situation. How do we get more information? How can we get in touch with DePaul, get more information about what services are available, what services individuals may need, that type of thing?
So our website has an abundance of resources. That is where folks can start. It's www.depaulcr.org. But after you read all of that, you're going to have a million questions and some questions that aren't going to be answered from our website. So I encourage folks to reach out to us at our local offices. All of the office contact information is on our website, but if they're here local to the Lynchburg or Roanoke region, I work for both Lynchburg and Roanoke offices, I am happy to be a resource. They can contact me via my office number, which is 434-455-3727. My direct extension is 6523, or they can reach out to us via our website. There is an information portal where they can go on there and request information, and that comes through to me as well, and I'd be happy to get folks the info they need.
Thank you very much, both for being willing to just give so much of your day to helping so many other people. And thanks for stopping by and letting us know what's going on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for giving us a platform to talk about this.